This Dharma talk was given to the Clearway Zen Sangha by Lotus Vu. This talk is made available free of charge. More information about Clearway Zen can be found at www.clearwayzen.ca.
I visited Vietnam in 2016. I was traveling around, visiting different monasteries. A lot of things change. Vietnam in the last 10 years. The government has relaxed control of religion and allowed more ability for the masses to practice religion and congregate and build temples. So there was a mass exodus of temple building, fever. That happened in Vietnam in the last 10, 15 years. So I traveled to those newly built temple monasteries that see. There's a big Theravadin temple in Vietnam, in the south side of the largest city in southern Vietnam, Ho Chi Minh City. So I went there. It was huge. And elaborate. One thing you can trust the Asian Vietnamese people to do is donate. A lot of them don't want to practice, but they want to donate to whoever practice or the monk so they can get some merit, you know, sort of like, I'll go along for the ride. You're on your way to liberation. And as I was strolling through the garden of the temple, beautiful garden, there's this nice tree growing. I sat down on the bench underneath the tree, and I saw a little medal painted a poster, metal plate nailed onto the tree, and it had a quote from the Buddha from the Pali Canon. And the quote says, "The past is no more, the future is yet to come. The present is where wisdom and insight coming from observation lie. Stay in the present." What a beautiful quote, what a simple quote. What a beautiful pointer. I spent 13 years of my first journey of Zen practice muddling around. Books, Dharma talks, sitting on the cushion, just trying to control everything. When I came short, I realized all of that is futile. And everything that quote said was true. Why did they just highlight and bolded that thing in the books and say, just focus here? It was so simple. It was ridiculously simple that when I came short, I couldn't stop laughing. I just read myself stupid for the last 13 years. And I missed something completely simple right in front of me. So the practice in earnest can only be found in the present. So at that time, Eckhart Tolle wrote The Power of Now, and it was a runaway kind of like a runaway bestseller really quickly. And I thought, great, somebody finally clued in. When I read his books, I thought, you know what? This is the best pointer there is. And his words are very simple that he can explain it to anyone who can understand. And for years, I went to Thich Nhat Hanh retreat, and he just said, be present, be here. I am here, I am home. It was hitting me in the face. I didn't get it. What do you mean I'm here, I'm home? What I'm looking at here, my body is just so agitated. I'm completely bored. This is home? What do you mean? But it's when we can embrace all the things that arise in the present that we can truly find our home. We can truly discover wisdom. See, when the Buddha taught sitting meditation, he taught us to sit and apply the three trainings, the jhanas, you know, the kind of attention training, or, you know, they like to translate it concentration, right? Like to call it attention training. Vipassana or sati, the ability to be present and observe what's going on and have some distance from whatever you're observing. We translate it to mindfulness, but the truth is the opposite. We empty our mind. Our mind's not full when we're doing that. Our mind becomes empty. But my critiques of a lot of bad translation. But it's stuck. And while we're doing that, we're very aware because our clarity increased, that we can see if we're doing things that are harmful to ourselves and others or not. And therefore, we can instantly adjust that action in adherence with the precept. Because if you're aware that you're doing harmful things to yourself and others, why the hell would you continue? Doesn't make sense, right? But all of this can't happen if you are not present. And what does being present mean? When this gets tossed around a lot, it's very popular since Eckhart Tolle's book, right? I now. And the Buddha explains present really well, and he took 45 years to do it. It means dispassionately, no judging, no preference, looking at what's going on. Now, and how do you know which is now? Okay, I have to explain because a lot of us don't know which is now, right? Is now the thought I'm thinking right now? No. The thought you're thinking right now is one small part of now. Can you hear the sound outside? Can you notice your breath going in and out? See, the Buddha is very aware that a lot of us has problem with being in the now. That's why he says, ground yourself in the breath, something physical. Because you can actually get the illusions of sound that's not even there. As many of us meditators who went on long retreats know that, right? Or smell of something that's not even there. You can't have delusions about your breath and your body coming up and down. The sensations in the body is pretty much what you see is normally what you get, right? So when I was treating patients with PTSD, there was a gentleman who had witnessed his father, found his father dead on the couch when he woke up the next day. And he had PTSD from that incident. And so he says, when his flashback happens, he's transported by any trigger that reminds him of his father. It's almost like he's back in that room the day that he found his father passed away. The smell, the sight, the feeling, it rushes all back in, and the sound of the ambulance siren. It all rushes back in. And he was, after his father passed away, he had to go back to university and finish his final year. And he said he could walk in to a lecture hall and gets triggered and completely transported back to that, to his father's living room. So at that time, he was taught to ground himself, grab onto something physical. Feel that. Just focus on the sensation. Just feel that you're here. And slowly transform that over to the other senses. It's a little bit distracting, less distracting. Like monitor your breath. Slow it down. Look at something on the wall in the room. Listen to the sound of what's going on around you. Center yourself. You are here in the present. And he said that was how he dealt with all his flashbacks right after his father passed away. And he had a whole year of it. So he was able to go back to school and finish his final year. It was tough, but he got through it by learning to ground his senses in the present. He said that was the best thing that I've learned to deal with this awful situation. So you see, the Buddha's teaching, it might sound far away, you know, for some yogis in the mountains. It might sound distant, a bit metaphysical, but it's not. Designed to end suffering. The Buddha said, I teach nothing but suffering and the end of suffering. We don't like the first part. This very simple act of grounding yourself in the present. And you're saying, I don't have PTSD like him. I don't have flashback. Oh, yeah? Observe yourself. Take a test just one day. Keep staying in the present. As long as you, when your mind goes to the past, go, no, come back here. That's gone. That's a memory. I'm just ruminating about something that's gone, right? Or your mind projects in the future and you feel anxious, you know, about whatever's coming in the future, like Trump. You know? You realize, hey, that's not there. That's not here yet. That's not here yet. What is here is me washing the dishes. I feel my arm, my hands. I can feel the water. I know that's boring to look at. At first, you're going to feel agitated and bored. Come on, mind says. Give me something interesting to chew on, right? It doesn't like chewing on bare sensation. It has nothing to chew on. So you got to deal with a little bit of boredom. And underneath that boredom is a little bit of agitation. And when you see that arise, don't try to push it away. Notice it just like the water going through your hand. Because it's just another phenomenon. Nothing personal. It happens. Tell me somebody who doesn't experience boredom. A human being, you're going to experience it. One of my professors at York University, he spends 30 years studying boredom. I know. I love him. He's a really nice guy. When I asked him, what's your research topic? He says boredom. I went and looked up. He did. He published about 20 papers on boredom. He's really that's interested great. In something that's boring, isn't it? Yeah. I really did look into it. I really did. I really did look into his papers. And I found it, you know, you might laugh, but there's some interest in that because it came down to the study of attention. Right? How our attention and how we use our attention contributes to boredom. And the stimulus that reduces boredom and the stimulus is that causes boredom when we don't have it anymore. So I can understand his interest in it. It's just one area that you don't generally find interesting. So boredom is something who you will encounter when you're in the present. Because the mind needs stimulation. Blocks it. The thinking. It's like a machine that you can't turn off. You are not using your mind. It's using you. Just think of a machine that you can't unplug. And you are the battery. Literally. So being in the present is bringing our attention to the other senses of our body. We have five senses. We don't plug them in very often. Why? Because we're completely plugging in and the mind's hogging everything. So when you see the mind going, I got something to do tomorrow, that is trying to plug you in, right? Oh, I got an interesting idea, and then it goes there. That's plugging you in. Just think of anything that arises out of the present with your mind thinking that it doesn't need to be thinking in that moment. You don't need to be thinking when you're sweeping the house or cleaning the house. I love cleaning for that reason. Because the mind jumps in and go, well, probably that clean. Or you're sitting on your meditation cushion and the mind jumps in and next thing you know, you're gone for 5 minutes. You're like, I don't really need that right now. So you can't put it down. And the mind generates past and future. And it always tries to use past and future to lure you in, to plug you in, and your battery gets drained. You ever have the experience of laying down to sleep and then the mind just ruminates? Oh yeah, we all been there. Fast, fast, fast. Oh my God. It ruminates after a while. You're like, God, stop. Let me sleep. And the more you do that, the more you feed it because you're paying attention to it. You're essentially plugging in. What do? You bring that attention to the body, therefore unplugging the mind. And this is what the Buddha taught. Bring your attention to your breath. Bring your attention to your physical senses. Bring your attention to your ears. Listen to the sound outside. Your nose. Your taste. He's telling you to unplug from the mind. It's one of six senses, but it dominates the field. So being present is a place where you can unplug the mind. When Zen practice talk about no mind, they literally are meaning that. When you can't show for a while, your mind's just completely blank and everything just crystal clarity. Like, where did it go? And you're totally okay with it. And everything's just okay. The sense of okayness is incredible. Isn't that what psychology has been heading at for a long time? Yes. It's not about feeling good. It's about, okay. Suddenly the world is okay. Suddenly the you that you sought for a long time that was there doesn't exist. Why? Because you need thought to generate this perception of separation, this perception of a self, that you're different from everything and everybody else. And this experience of Kensho brings somebody to the ultimate presence. No labels. No mental projection here. Honestly, if I could, I would bash all those translators of Sanskrit because they should have done a better job. Tathagata, the word that is very, very front and center in Mahayana Buddhism, which Zen is in one of these schools, means I'm here. They could have just translated that word to be here now. I remember there's a book on that in the 60s. Yeah. Be here now. So for the Buddha, what is he teaching? Step by step to bring people to be here now. To discover their mind through the observation of the present, to discover the truth of their reality, their nature, through the observation of the present, because that is the only place where insight and wisdom arrive. Why? Because the past, you ever live in the past? Anybody breathing in there right now? The future? Usually a bad guess for most of us, right? The future is always anxious. We always project anxiety on there, right? And when it does come, it comes as the present. I'm sorry, you can never escape the present. You can do it mentally, and never do it physically. So we're always checking out of the present. You know what we call that in trauma treatments? Disassociation. And there's a spectrum of it from mild to extreme, right? Extreme is dissociation personality disorder. Or you used to have another term for that, multiple identity disorder. Mild disassociation is checking out. So we can say, as the Buddha said, all this suffering, you guys are all checking out. Nobody is present. Everybody checked out of the present. We're constantly distracting ourselves. When I was growing up, what do we have? Books. Oh my God, us kids were completely distracted with comics and books. And of course, it's encouraged because, you know, parents think you get more intelligent reading more books. But boy, did I get took that to the extreme. I love Kung Fu novel fictions. I read 21 of them in 1 week. I literally was in my, you know, my room under the blankets holding a flashlight reading it. I was that addicted. I was checking out. Why? Because my environment was so unstable, was so uncomfortable. And humans' normal response is avoidance. And if you can't physically get out, you mentally get out. But the Buddha says, that's not the way. Yeah, we have to face the discomfort. We have to accept the discomfort. The only way out is through. If we can't tolerate and accept the discomfort and be friend with it, our avoidance will create suffering. Because pain is unavoidable in life. Put up your hand here, all those who've been alive and haven't experienced pain. Pain is unavoidable. You can't avoid it. And the avoidance itself causes suffering. But the translation in the Buddhist text is aversion. I know, that's 100 years ago term. Like, how many of us use that term now? We use avoidance, right? Yeah. So we're checking out mentally when it's uncomfortable. What I've learned with being present is that you're going to get thrown all kinds of discomfort. And as soon as your avoidance mechanism kicks in to find pleasure, that discomfort becomes even more intolerable the next time you see it again. In psychology, we call it reinforcement by avoidance. So the more you avoid something, the worse it gets. You're reinforcing it. So for the Buddha is just a space it. Understand it. Accept it. And normally, it passes pretty fast. I'm not telling you to sit there while people beat you. No. That's not the discomfort to accept. We have a thing called understand it, being present, and then you have the wisdom to know what to do next. So you always have three choices. Accept it, change it, or leave it. And you have the wisdom after you accept the discomfort to be able to choose what is the best route forward. Otherwise, you're just acting impulsively in a way that's innately programmed in us, by the way. We're fighting against really hard things here. It's avoidance, because to sustain our survival, we are almost innately built to preserve our life, our being from harm. And the best way to do that is run, escape. Right? Evolution doesn't care if you're surviving and miserable. It just cares that you make babies. That's what I found out being a part, you know, studying evolutionary psychology and motivation. It's not It's not great that we're so basic. But being present is learning to face discomfort. Learning to look at it without judgment. Learning to accept the present moment as is. So wisdom can arise that allow us to have insight to be able to make the best choice. You know, when I was in Vietnam and I hung out my teacher's temple, the abbot there had many, when I was growing up there, the abbot there had many young monks coming from the rural areas during the rain retreat to stay there so they can study at the university during the rain retreats or study from the elders. So that he would have hundreds of young monks stay there during the rain retreat, which is 3 months in the summer. And some of them would take higher ordination. And in Vietnam, if you take in higher ordination, there was an elaborate ceremony whereby they put 3 burning incense on top of your head. And you have to meditate while they do that. And they're chanting and doing the ceremony at that point. Of course, they don't leave it on there for a long time, but I was wondering as a kid, why are you like torturing yourself? And so I don't know if they still have that, but that was sort of like the tradition that was passed on from Zen training from China, which is called Chan. That you have to be able to tolerate pain and face it and encounter it directly and see through the process of it in order to really understand Zen. And of course, that ceremony stuck. I'm sure not a lot of novice monks are terribly good at meditation. Most of them who took a higher ordination at that time were 18 to 20. So they were telling me all their stories about how they did it. One monk told me, oh my God, I just bit my teeth and grinned and just let it pass. And as a kid, I always wondered, what the hell? Thank God they don't have that practice at Plum Village. I think they're kind of so gentle. If he does that, I don't know how many people would want higher ordination. But the thing is, to be present is to discover in the present the true reality of how your body and mind function. How it generates suffering. And ultimately, from the understanding of it, from the dispassionate observation, you can't push it away. That's being biased, right? You can't like it. That's being biased too. So the dispassionate observation in order to understand the processes that's happening and gain insight and wisdom to free ourselves from the suffering that these processes generate. Of course, when we first came to Buddhism, we're always focusing on the anxiety. All of us. Nobody comes to Buddhism because they're so happy. We came because of the first message. Life is suffering. Put up your hand. You came because you're so happy. Nobody comes to Buddhism happy because they think life is great. Maybe some of my friends in, you know, high school, they came to temple to pick up girls, but other than that, other than that, most of us really took on Buddhism because we realized that life is dissatisfying. So the first thing that we take a crack at is the dissatisfaction that is going on in the present moment. But the first thing that we have to acknowledge is the first noble truth. Life is unsatisfactory. And until you really look at the present moment that you're experiencing day to day, can you really appreciate that? Because normally people say, hey, I have a good house, I have a job, I have a pretty good, decent partner who's loving, some kids, a dog. It's pretty satisfying. Yeah. Just start looking at your present moment, going through the day, you'll see. There's stress. There's anxiety. There's fear. Worry. There's boredom. Boredom is unsatisfactory. Trust me. I spent most of my 20s avoiding boredom by being a workaholic. So we're constantly in this state of avoidance because we can't face things that are difficult to face in our everyday life. We check up. Whether it's work, drugs, alcohol, social media, we check up. So, how do you check in? Be here now. Confront all the things that arises. See it come. See it go. See all the visitors. And realizing that you're the owner of the house. You don't have to push away the visitors. Visitors leave. Visitors tend to leave, right? They don't stay. You don't have to push the discomfort away. When the visitors come, do you go, I don't want to know you, even though you're staying in my house? You come with this curiosity. Hi, where are you from? What are your interests? That's what we do to visitors, right? So when boredom comes, takes the stance of my professor. Wow, you're interesting. Let me know you. Instead of telling the visitors, go away. What up in your house? Be a good host while they're there. By being interested. By being non-judgmental. Because once you start averting, you basically tell the visitor, go away. Go away. I don't want you. Does that work? No. So being present is greeting all the visitors with open hands, open curiosity. Of course, a lot of us don't want to do that. It's uncomfortable. Okay, what does this uncomfortable feels like? Looks like? Can I tolerate it? Who's tolerating the discomfort? Where does that tolerating come from? Is it really that uncomfortable? So we ask all these questions and we greet the visitors. So being present, being in the now, it's interesting. Because you never know who's going to show up. You never know who's going to show up. It could be you in childhood. And whenever I get sick, my little kid comes out. Mom's supposed to take care of me. She's abandoned me. And when I was a kid, my mom had 5 kids and she worked really hard, 12 hours a day. She's not there for me. So my little child comes out. Oh my God, yeah, my mom just abandoned me. She's bad. And whoever happens to be around gets to be mom. That's the visitor that comes up when you're watching in the present. When I noticed that, wow. This visitor, kind of cool. Where did it came from? That I understood. That's where it came from. And I was like, wait a minute. I'm an adult. This visitor that just came that I just identified with was a child. But I'm an adult now. I can take care of myself. I don't need to wait for mom to cook for me. I'll just go skip the dishes or Uber Eat. Instant chicken soup. That's really good and not canned. You see? So I just became a mom. That's what that visitor is looking for. Or you go back home to your spouse or your partner, and they're doing something and triggers you, and the visitor comes. You always do that. And your spouse is like, what? What did I do? The visitor that just came is, you don't appreciate me. You don't love me. Crying for love from a child. And it's all happening in the present. You want to watch? It comes right up. It's not just boredom. There's a ton of other stuff. And this is the reason why the Buddha says, watch the present. Be mindful. Sati, observation with dispassion. Don't have preferences. Be mindful. Seek to understand what's going on. Is it good to do that half an hour a day, 15 minutes a day on your cushion? Yeah, it's a good place to start. Except you have 24 hours a day. You only spend 15 minutes or 30 minutes understanding what's arising in the present? Gosh, the less the, you know, all the other times you're going to be walking blind. Not understanding yourself at all. Not understanding all these visitors that arise in you. That's why in the Zen practice, we do the concentration, attention training practice on the cushion. And then when we're off the cushion, we try to do the mindfulness practice. 24/7. Why? Because that's where you really get to understand yourself, but you won't be able to do it without a clear, calm lens. And that's why we practice the calming practice on the cushion. So very accomplished meditators will go into a state that's almost like falling asleep. Self-induced coma. Where the ultimate rest happens, it's called dreamless sleep. Where the body is so relaxed, as soon as they stand off the cushion, the lens is so clear and so purified that they can see everything in the present and stay in the present for much, much longer time than the average person. And that results in what? No suffering. Because as soon as your mind jumps in, your thinking pattern jumps in, your perceptive pattern jumps in, it starts to create a drama. Think Games of Thrones. Or Melrose Place, for those who grew up in the 90s. I don't know, that drama is so sick. Melrose Place? Oh, I watched a couple episodes and I go, oh my God. But it was very popular. Yes, but that's your life if you're not watching. That's your life if you're not watching. Self-generating. Drama producer. That's our mental processes. So this little blip sign on the tree that I saw at the Theravadin Monastery is a teaching that's so powerful, that's so direct. Very few of us appreciate it. Because completely identified with the mind, we just want to go look for something interesting, something complicated, something not boring. We consume Dharma, Buddhist teachings, to stop ourselves from being bored. I asked one of the monks that I know, who's very famous right now. All his teaching, traveling around the world, teaching. The last time I met him in Regina, I said, you travel too much, you teach too much. You know, do you think anybody gets it? And he's like, no, I give spiritual entertainment until they realize that they have to sit down and do it. But that keeps their attention for the time being. Hopefully something happens. And unfortunately, that is the reality. That was me. I was doing that. And I'm glad I tuned into that channel instead of Melrose Place, by the way. It's not a bad channel to tune in, you know. If you're going to entertain yourself, at least entertain yourself with something healthy, like spiritual entertainment. Go listen to all these Dharma talks. And even brag sometimes. I know. I know all these things. It's a good first step. Until you look in the present and you decide, oh my God, my life is dissatisfying. Then you get on your butt on the cushion and do something about it. But until we acknowledge that, hey, it's okay, spiritual entertainment's pretty good. It's the first step. I spent over 10 years of that, and I really appreciate that. Why? Because when I really started practicing, I had all these contacts, all these background understanding to help my practice move forward. So it's not bad at all. That's part of the process. But I truly hope that you live in the present. Touch something physical. Touch yourself. Ground yourself in the present, because that's where liberation can be found, which comes from understanding our mental process, understanding it. And from that understanding, we can free ourselves.
This podcast is created by members of the Clearway Zen Sangha. If you enjoyed the talk and wish to show support, donation information can be found on our website, www.clearwayzen.ca. Thank you for listening.